Please accept our apologies for any bangs or scrapes you may hear. Due to the global pandemic, we're recording this remotely. Thanks very much, and we hope you enjoy.
Hello, I'm Debs.
And I'm Hannah, and welcome to The Write-Off, a podcast for the everyday writer.
Even if you don't write every day.
Whether you're hoping that what you're working on will one day be a Sunday Times bestseller, or you're simply putting words on the page for the pleasure of it, The Write-Off is a podcast for every writer on the journey.
You might be squeezing your writing time in around multiple jobs or childcare, or even just around the ebbs and flows of your own enthusiasm. But we're here to say, us too.
This is a place to connect and share how you're getting on.
It's a space for the story behind your stories.
And so, that leads us seamlessly on to the subject of today's podcast.
Welcome to episode 2, Juggling. So, Hannah, how is the writing going?
I think at the moment, the biggest thing for me is just I'm not fitting any writing in at all. It's just a non-starter at the moment. And I was thinking about this earlier because I think I always carry around this like idea that if I was a serious writer, I would be doing it anyway, even if it meant getting up at 5 a.m.
Yeah, like in the movies, like Jo in Little Women. She starts writing at 10 p.m. and then at 10 a.m. she's got a novel.
Yeah. Oh, that's how you do it. Oh, I didn't
realise. And she does it with like feather and ink.
Well, you know, I always do have that feeling like, well, if I really wanted to write, I would manage it no matter what.
Yeah.
Because there's often like massive periods of time for me where I don't write anything at all. I don't know if you have the same.
Well, see, I was thinking, do we talk about this in general or do we talk about it in relation to the fact that we're in the middle of a global pandemic? And I don't feel like at the moment it's necessarily being real to talk about it generally, because it's there are so many other pressures on us at the moment. You know, it depends on what your situation is, but some people, for example, are furloughed. I'm not furloughed, but if they might then think, well, this is when I should be sitting down and doing my writing. But it's like being furloughed in a lockdown when you can't go anywhere. Yes, it gives you this time to sit at your desk and, you know, and focus, which is great. Like, time is amazing. Time is the dream. But you're not going out and interacting with people and getting the kind of inspiration that you might usually get in order to assist with your writing. So even that, it's like you can kind of envy people if they've got a bit more time in their hands at the moment, but it's not real life.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's pressures, there's mental health pressures. There's a lot going on in everyone's heads as well that isn't necessarily conducive to great creativity. You know.
No, you're right. And actually, somebody said, this is about homeschooling. They were like, it's not homeschooling, it's emergency schooling. Yeah. And I think that applies as well to something like the creative process, like trying to write. You're in an emergency. You're in an emergency.
I think we've all forgotten that. It's really bizarre and it's a lot to deal with.
I just think for every one person who might think, oh, I have been furloughed or I can't see my friends, I'm going to channel my energy into writing that I've always wanted to do. I think there's probably about 10 people who have loads of things they would love to be approaching. But like you said, there's no space. There's no headspace.
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest thing for me, because I never get a moment's silence. You know, I might be in a room on my own, but it's like you said, it's like all of that anxiety, the wider pressure of everything that's going on, the unusual nature of the way we're existing, especially now we're back in a national lockdown. It's just, it's mad. But I wonder if when we move to a more normal place, if there'll suddenly be like a whole rash of books that are written in response. Not even necessarily fiction, but, you know, I already see it. Like, people.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely already been a couple of bad movies. How cynical is that when they've actually already written and cast and produced, you know, and filmed and released videos about global pandemics? So I talk about cash in on something hideous, but no, you're right. I'm sure there will be, but it's certainly not if you're writing something that isn't about a pandemic, you certainly might not be getting the inspiration that you would usually have by interacting with your family and your friends and sitting in a coffee shop and watching and, you know, all of those things that actually genuinely can help, you know.
Generally, if I was going to sit down to write, I need to kind of like buffer it, if you know what I mean, by having like a bit of time, sit in the quiet, have a little think, maybe read through some stuff from previous weeks. You know, you lead yep. into it. You don't yep. start from cold.
With that in mind, there were a couple of things that I wrote down. I'm certainly not doing these at the moment, but as little bits of advice to myself in order to just keep engaged with what I'm writing. And one is, if you've got 20 minutes, read what you've written, and that's it. That is your one task for that day. Just read what you've written, because then you can go around and be thinking about it. And if you're thinking about it, you know, there's more chance of you kind of going, you know what, with that section there, I want to say something about this. And then you write it in your notes on your iPhone or wherever, and then you carry on with your day. That's what I'm going to try and do, is just try to mentally engage if I can't actually sit down and do anything. And then when there's more time to breathe, you know, I can revisit it, knowing that it's not complete. It doesn't come a complete stranger to me when I sit back down and go, what was this again? It's a small goal.
I think that's a really good idea. I think I am guilty of being like, I haven't got time to do anything. I haven't got time to do anything.
Yeah.
When actually...
But small goals.
Small goals, reducing your demands.
Another one is when you're out for a walk or run, just think, right, I'm just going to think about this character or this moment for a minute, you know, might give you that light bulb moment or help make a decision about that part of your writing.
I remember one of my tutors on my MA saying to us that if we wrote 300 words a day, then in a year we would have a novel.
Yeah. I mean, that's not much. 300 words.
Right. It's not much in the grand scheme of things.
Then let's do it.
Why are we not doing it, darling? Do you ever get that feeling like the sand is slipping through the thing and all the choices that you've made, have a family or like everybody has to work or whatever it is, whatever the time pressures are, you're like, there's more sand slipping through. And I don't know, it's not because I feel like I've got an expiry date and it's like, once I've reached a certain age, I'm not entitled to write anymore and I'm past the window of being able to achieve it. But I also just feel like, am I ever, you know, I used to think of 40 as a kind of, not a cutoff point, but like a goal to aim for. And now I'm like fucking 45.
But when I do think that and a lot, but I also tell myself the older I get, the more experienced life, the better writer I'll be.
Well, because when you think about it, we were writing together in our 20s and we were writing through the lens of what we were experiencing then. But
that's why everything we wrote about was just pure alcohol, partying and sex.
We were just living visceral life. I don't wonder how much money we spent on red wine.
We did go through a phase of using the Slug and Lettuce as our office, didn't we?
It's true. So, they knew us. Another small Cabernet Sauvignon that you're going to take 3 hours to drink? Thanks very much. So that is what I tell myself, is that we experience more. We've got more to write about.
I think the pressure is a societal one.
The idea that by a certain age or by a certain time, you should have achieved something. That's not real. I mean, who's telling me that? I'm telling myself that. But I mean, that's bollocks. And like you said, when it comes to something like writing, you're honing a craft, not to sound like a wanker. And that is something that could only be done by time. Like, even if you were to hit this really amazing streak of creativity and you typed out a novel and it just flowed from you and it took like a matter of months,
you hear about people doing it, right?
They get the like inspiration,
but Jo in Little Women.
Exactly. Our muse Jo.
But that's still
only a first draft. You know, that's still just a jumping off point, you know, and then you've still got to do all of the hard work of like honing and redrafting. And, you know, it just is a thing that takes time. Yeah. So that doesn't necessarily work very well with an impatient personality.
So Laura Ingalls Wilder, you know, who wrote Little House on a Prairie, her first thing she published, she was 65.
No, shut up.
Frank McCourt, do you know Angela's Ashes? Pulitzer Prize winning. He was 66.
Amazing.
Toni Morrison was aged 40 when she published her first book, The Bluest Eye.
I just read The Bluest Eye.
And it's really interesting.
So even though she wrote that when she was 40, there was a really interesting essay in the back of it where she basically critiqued her own novel and pointed out all the reasons why it wasn't very good.
Or not that it wasn't very good.
Because obviously it's Toni Morrison and it was, woo, some powerful writing. But basically she went through it and was like, this is when I was being a bit self-indulgent. This is where my inexperience, like I didn't explain what I was trying to say very well because I was inexperienced. This is where I used the kind of like trope I wouldn't use anymore because I've learned as a writer how to be cleverer basically when I write. And I was like, oh my God, that's so refreshing. She wasn't like ripping it to shreds. She was also saying, you know, that she's proud. She's proud of being able to get the story down. It's a really hard story to...
That's the opposite of self-indulgent in general, though, isn't it? And it's a massive gift to give to other people, that is.
Yeah. But I was like, as somebody who, you know, is obviously attempting to write a novel, I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Obviously, that's all done through the benefit of hindsight, having written and published it. But I think it's that thing of like allowing yourself to make mistakes and know that what you're working on. Say, for example, if I were to finish my novel and one day publish it, it would be my debut novel. Well, obviously, the next thing I worked on would be different again. And the next novel after that would be different again. And not to say that it would necessarily be better, but you're always learning and you're always improving on what came before, aren't you?
Of course, and there's no perfect thing.
No. And I think it's allowing yourself, giving yourself a break and saying, this is what I put out into the world this time. It doesn't define me, though.
So do you believe in routine?
When it comes to writing, do you think there is like something to be said for, obviously not at the moment because nobody can really have a routine, but if we were in normal times?
Definitely. So I went through a phase of when I was commuting in to work, working on the train on the way in. So I got a keyboard for the iPad because I just found it a bit much to like take in the laptop. So it's like lighter and easier to just kind of pull out. I did find, and I think most people find this is a problem anyway, is that at the end of the day I'm tired, so I couldn't really do it on the commute home. I'm too tired, my brain's fried. But then it depends how you work. Like I think that in a dream scenario I probably would, if I had some time off to actually work on writing, I would work better if I pretended I was in a 9-to-5 job, rather than just dipping in and out without any routine. But everyone's different.
Well, for me, I really work best if I've got deadlines, which obviously at the moment I have to set for myself, or I have to ask someone, my partner, to sort of, but then again, having said that, if you ask a loved one to set you a deadline, you quickly resent them when they're like, your deadline's coming up. Even though I've asked him to remind me so that I feel a certain sense of pressure. That's why it's good to have a workshop group. There's a little bit of distance between you and there's a professional element to your relationship, even though they are my mates. So if there's an expectation from them that they're going to see some work from me, then I feel, I need to get this done. If I don't have any kind of deadline, I can find a million and one reasons to do anything other than sit at my laptop, or I will sit at my laptop, but it's all just a charade because I'm not actually doing anything. And I'll be on the BBC website.
You go down the rabbit hole anyway, if you're researching something and then you get lost and then you end up completely reading about something totally different from what you're researching for what you're writing.
Oh yeah, I'm the queen of procrastination. I totally agree with you about getting to the end of the day and being tired. But then also what I experience a lot is that just as I'm about to go to sleep, just as my brain, I suppose, is like switching off from
life.
Yeah. Suddenly all of these like ideas, or sometimes literally dialogue, will come into my head as I'm about to go to sleep. So sometimes I do the sensible thing of like writing that dialogue down in my phone. But quite often what I do instead is go, oh, that's good, I'll remember that in the morning.
Same. And you never do. It's true. And it sounds so arrogant. But sometimes I think, yeah, but that's such a good idea. That is such a good idea. I'll never forget that.
I do.
And then I forget it.
I do it so many times. And then I'm just literally like, why the fuck did I not just literally type that out in my phone? It would have taken me 3 minutes. But yeah, I am like, that's great. Or whenever
something
I get
to be said to, for like... that though. I don't want to sound too wanky, but your brain is switching off. You're in a more relaxed meditative state. And then your ideas come. It just goes to show that if you had the time to do a bit of meditation or a bit of yoga before you're writing. But like you say, you set up before you're writing, yeah? You've got to read it, you've got to get in the right frame of mind. But then it might make that whole next, you know, say you had an hour and you did 5 minutes of breathing, it might actually make, you know, the 55 minutes a whole lot better.
Yeah. That whole voices coming into my head at bedtime thing, that again feeds into that idea that I sometimes have, that if I was a proper writer or if I was more committed, I would get up and write it. You know how you hear like some people like literally will work until like 3 a.m? I think I read that Phoebe Waller-Bridge literally writes all night.
Wow.
Because that's, I guess, you know, it's horses for courses, right? Obviously for her, she's a nocturnal person. And so maybe that's just when her juices start flowing, so to speak. But sometimes I'm like, well, if that's when things are popping into my head, maybe that's when I should be getting my laptop out. And even if it feels alien, that's when I should be like, right, I'm going downstairs with my laptop, see what happens. Maybe the magic will happen. Or maybe I could just go to sleep because my kids get up at 6 a.m.
I'm the same. But I don't think that you call yourself a writer because you don't get any sleep and you're that dedicated. If that's what you're good at, that's what you're passionate about, and that's what you intend to do, then you're a writer. I don't think we should be beating ourselves up about what we're not doing.
You're working within the constraints of what you've got.
You know, life is chaotic and messy. And the biggest thing that's helped me through this is being able to pick up a book.
Even though I'm not necessarily sitting down on my laptop and putting words onto the page, I still think that when there is a bit more space, I will have gained something from the limitations of the now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I also find that reading, it's de-stressing me as well.
Yeah.
But it's something that for the moment you can use as a way of escaping a bit, limiting the stress that you feel, calming down, and it's always, always going to help with your writing. So what have we learned from our conversation today about juggling writing with your everyday life?
I guess we've learned that it's always going to be hard. Well, there isn't a perfect way to approach it, is there? Especially not at the moment. But anything that you are managing to do, no matter how small that might feel, it all counts. Everything counts, and everything will eventually feed back into your work. What's the point in putting extra pressure on yourself at a time like this?
She said, you're all doing brilliantly, whatever you're doing. And so are we. Well done, Hannah.
Oh, well done. Deb.
Thanks. Our next podcast, we're going to call The Mother-in-Law. It's going to be about whether we think we censor our content based on who we believe is going to read it. So we really hope you'll join us for that one. Come follow us on Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. We hope you're doing well, and best of luck with your writing.
Thank you for listening. If you did want to come and join us, then you can follow us at The Write Off Podcast on Instagram. If you have enjoyed today's episode, then please do subscribe, rate and review us. It helps people to find us, and every listen and download to our little podcast really does make a difference, and we really do appreciate it.